up, guys? Welcome to the Geostemies Podcast. I'm Derek. I have Larry here with me. This week, we finish up our series on Church of the Doomed, talking about letters to slaves and why that's in the New Testament. But before that, we'll be back in about 60 seconds.
Letter to the Doomed Church at Colossae by looking actually at a companion letter that was sent with it, because I think it shines a lot of light into this topic that is covered in the book of Colossians. It's also mentioned in the book of Ephesians that was sent at the same time. And then there's this third letter that was sent in this group of three letters to this these locations. Actually, there were four letters, but that was also sent that we have. These letters were written by Paul and Timothy and possibly some others, and they were sent with Tychicus and Onesimus to deliver them. Paul actually mentions in Colossians 4:16 that there were four letters, because we know that there was Ephesians, we know that there was Colossians, we know that there was Philemon, but Paul specifically mentions that he also sent a letter to the church of Laodicea with these letters that we do not have.
I would love to see that letter, because I'm pretty sure it was probably Paul just telling them how stupid they were.
It could be. But I mean, the interesting thing is that when we look at Colossians and Ephesians, there's a ton of copy and paste.
Oh, yeah.
So it's possible that we don't have the letter to Laodicea because he literally didn't write anything in it at all that wasn't already in either Ephesians or Colossians. But maybe it was an entire... So it's just, it's interesting to me, though, that he specifically says that he sent a letter that we don't have. But
I don't know. I just think that it's funny because he could be like, oh, foolish Colossians. Like he says...
Yeah.
Oh, foolish Laodiceans.
Maybe he was even meaner to the Laodiceans. Like, maybe they were worse than the Galatians.
I'm here for it.
Yeah. I would love, I mean, to be fair, if you gave me a writing and you could, and like the Lord verified that this was actually written by Paul, I don't care if it was a dinner order.
No, yeah. Like, for sure.
Dude, I will sit here and read a recap of Paul's dinner orders every night from prison. I'm good with it.
Show will.
Yeah, so I mean, but this week we're going to look specifically at the book of Philemon, and we're going to also look at Ephesians and Colossians. We're going to discuss and take a look at why Paul seems so pro-slavery. That just seems like a really odd position to take. Like, it feels odd and wrong in our culture. So first, let's talk about Philemon. Philemon was a leader of a house church in the city of Colossae.
Colossae, yes.
Colossae. Onesimus was a bondservant or slave in the home of Philemon. Onesimus fled. There's some theories about him. I remember when I was in the middle school, I read a book called Twice Freed that was a dramatization of this that I guess is a pretty well, semi-well-known book back in the day. I don't know if it's popular anymore.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Hey, ACE told me to read it, okay?
I don't know what ACE is either, but we read 12 Years a Slave, so...
Well, I'm not going to get myself in trouble. So, Onesimus fled, and some theorize that he stole some money or property of some sort, and he fled to Rome. In Rome, Onesimus came into contact with Paul. He heard about Jesus. He got saved. Onesimus began to work in the church of Rome, and Paul took a liking to him. Paul saw potential in him. Paul began to teach him. Paul began to grow him as a son in the gospel, like Timothy and Titus. Okay?
He obviously saw some potential in him.
he obviously saw something in him. Okay?
Which is again interesting because you have Timothy over here who's got a heritage of trusting in the Lord, and then Philemon is, or you know, Onesimus over here is a slave, at best.
Well, but you also have to remember that Timothy's heritage is his grandmother and his mother, but interestingly, not his father. And in that time period, that is literally the opposite of a heritage.
That's true.
Like, and so it's interesting that it's another social norm that seems to be being broken that we don't always acknowledge the way that we should. I love the Bible. I love Paul. Paul is awesome. Like, Paul is just a good dude. So Paul grows Onesimus. He gets to know him. They become closer and closer and closer. And at some point, it comes out that Onesimus is a runaway slave or bondservant. He is fled from the person that he owed or the person who owned him or however that worked. We'll get to that in a little while. And that's an issue. And so even though he was of great service to God in Rome, even though he was doing a great work of God, and even though, let's be real, Philemon probably wrote him off and assumed he was never coming back because it had been years, you'd think, at this point. Paul still looked at the situation and went, here's the deal. We have to make this right. So let's read Philemon 10 through 18. That's the only chapter of Philemon, chapter 1, verses 10 through 18. We're not reading 9 chapters of a book of the Bible on this podcast. And let's see what it says. And let's hear how Paul writes of or speaks of Onesimus. So if you could read that, Derek.
It says, I appeal to you for my child, Onesimus, whose father I became in my imprisonment. Formerly he was useless to you, but now he is indeed useful to you and to me. I am sending him back to you, sending my very heart. I would have been glad to keep him with me in order that he might serve me on your behalf during my imprisonment for the gospel, but I preferred to do nothing without your consent in order that your goodness might not be by compulsion, but out of your own accord. For this perhaps is why he was parted from you for a while, that you might have him back forever. No longer a bondservant, but more than a bondservant, as a beloved brother, especially to me, but how much more to you, both in the flesh and in the Lord. So if you consider me your partner, receive him as you would receive me. If he has wronged you at all or owes you anything, charge that to my account.
Okay, so a few things I want to point out here. One, I appeal to you for my child. Paul is making some strong statements here. For one, how often do we hear in our churches any minister, definitely not a minister of the stature of Paul in this world, say, I appeal to you for my child in the gospel? We don't have these kinds of relationships.
Well, I have a feeling it would be a little bit weird, but like saying it in the gospel, you have to think like there are people who I am not related to that I do consider like spiritual grandfathers and such.
Yeah.
Like,
I'm not saying that we don't have a piece of this, but I'm saying like, the level that Paul is speaking of Onesimus here, the way he speaks out, whose father I became in my imprisonment, the way that he talks of his attachment to Onesimus is similar to the way he talks of Timothy, similar to the way he talks of Titus. So we have multiple examples of who almost everyone considers the greatest Christian leader ever in history doing right. This. And we don't have this explicitly. and maybe we should, is all I'm saying. Just find that interesting. We'll say that's extra.
No, you're absolutely right.
That jumps out at me is that it's a big deal. But even more than that, he speaks of this person that is a runaway. In the version we read, which is the ESC, it says bondservant. But in the King James, it says slave. In most versions of the Bible, it says slave, not bondservant. Okay? He's writing this about a runaway slave, a bondservant. And he says, I am sending you my very heart in this person who wronged you. And I also find it interesting that he says that I didn't want to do anything without your consent because I didn't want your good deed to be done without your permission. Because that's another thing that I feel like sometimes we don't think about always.
Right.
And I'm not saying, just to be clear, neither of those statements about us not doing these things are, I am not subtweeting, I am not implying, I am not accusing. I am just saying that, man, like, when was the last time we said, hey, I know this is a good thing. I know because it's a good thing you'd be okay with doing it, but I just want you to know that it's happening.
Right.
You know, like, we don't do these things. We don't have that kind of love and respect for other people that way, always. And I think part of it's cultural. But point is that there's a lot of interesting stuff in here, but before we really get into the main event, the slavery, I want to back up a little bit because this topic is not only covered in this letter to Philemon, it's also covered in Colossians and in Ephesians, which, as I said, were written to at the same time from the same prison by Paul with the same co-writers as this book, okay? Right. So in Colossians chapter 3, verse 22 through chapter 4, verse 1, interestingly enough. And I know Paul didn't put the chapter markers, but it's interesting to me that this was put here. We see Paul write, bondservants. Again, our version says bondservants. King James says slaves. Obey in everything those who are your earthly masters, not by way of eye service as people pleasers, but with sincerity of heart, fearing the Lord. Whatever you do, work heartily as the Lord, as for the Lord and not for men, knowing that from the Lord you will receive the inheritance as your reward. You are serving the Lord Christ. For the wrongdoer will be paid back for the wrong he has done, and there is no partiality. Masters, treat your bondservants justly and fairly, knowing that you also have a master in heaven. All right, so Derek, could you read Ephesians chapter 6, verses 5 through 9?
Yep. So, bondservants, obey your earthly masters with fear and trembling, with a sincere heart as you would Christ, not by the way of eye service as people pleasers, but as bondservants of Christ, doing the will of God from the heart, rendering service with a good will as to the Lord and not to man. Knowing that whatever good anyone does, this he will receive back from the Lord, whether he is bondservant or is free. Masters, do the same to them and stop your threatening, knowing that he who is both their master and yours is in heaven, and there is no partiality with him.
Okay, so this is where we get into this point of what is this actually saying? So we have to remember some context, okay? First, when the Bible was translated into English, slavery was a thing. It still kind of is today, but not nearly as prevalent or accepted as it is now, okay? But the slavery that existed when the Bible was translated into English was a very specific thing. It was human chattel slavery, almost exclusively of Africans, for the purpose and at the service of European colonization of the world. Okay? That is what we think of in our lens in 21st century America, and really in the whole 21st century world, when we say the word slave. Okay? However, not only does this not seem to be the kind of slavery that Paul is referring to here, it literally is impossible for it to be explicitly the slavery Paul is referring to, because that kind of slavery doesn't exist until over 1,000 years after the time of Paul. Okay? So, in order to understand what this passage is saying, you have to remove from your head everything you've ever learned about slavery in America and in the European colonies, because those things explicitly are not what Paul is talking about here. And if you apply even just the one verse of writing that Paul wrote in Colossians and in Ephesians to the masters, it is clear that every single bit of those slaveries was in violation of the Bible. Okay? Stop threatening. Stop being cruel. Understand that you have a master as well. None of that existed in those slaveries. Okay?
They went as far as to try and keep Christianity from them in South America.
Yeah, exactly. So, like, clearly, whatever Paul is referring to here does not bear resemblance to what was called slavery in the 17 and 1800s. Okay? So, then we can look at the Greek word that is used in the Bible. It's doulos. Okay? What is used here, and it, depending on the context, it can mean a few different things. It can mean a servant. Okay? A servant meaning like an employee in the house setting of a richer noble or ruler. A rich person, a noble, or a ruler, right? A bond servant, so a person who is working in the same, in a similar context as a servant, but is working for the purpose of paying off debt. Or it can mean a slave, so someone who is owned by that person via an ancient form of chattel slavery. Okay, because that did exist to a degree at that point, this point in history. Okay, and that brings us to slavery in the Old Testament, because all of this affects, as we talk about all the time on this podcast, you can't consider the New Testament without looking at the Old Testament. You can't consider the Old Testament without looking at some of the history and the settings, and the New Testament without the history and the settings. You have to look at all of its context. And so slavery, the context of slavery in the Bible is important because Paul sent Onesimus back because his understanding of how slavery works and his understanding of how the church would allow slavery to work would very much have been affected and inspired by what the Old Testament says about the process. So the first thing we need to remember is what we talked about a few weeks ago when we talked about identity. According to God and the Bible, all Hebrews are nobility. All Hebrews. There is zero reason to think that any Christian would look at anybody, whether they were Christian or not Christian, in the first century in any other way.
Right.
Because Jesus said that all men are your neighbor. And they took that very literally. Okay? So that, again, it gives us another reason to think that they were definitely not talking about explicit ownership over other human beings. So Exodus 21 does allow for owning of slaves that are not Hebrew for the Hebrews. However, the function of that is different. How it works is different. In Genesis, we see that slaves in Israel are actually considered to be Hebrew. They become Hebrew. Okay. When Abraham is told to convert his house, he converts all of the slaves in his house, as well as anybody who is with his house. Okay. So if we look in Exodus where this is covered, we see that when a slave is Hebrew, after 6 years of slavery, no matter how much debt he was sold into slavery for or how he became a slave, that Hebrew slave must be set free in a state that is completely free of debt. Okay? So no matter how much debt you are in, after 6 years, all that debt is wiped out. Okay? The other interesting thing is that it does talk, because the thing is how marriage worked was very different. Functionally, you kind of purchased your bride, which means on some level, you were buying a slave and then declaring her your wife. Okay? But that even is spoken of as very different in the law. In Exodus 21, 8 through 11, this process is described. It's talked about. The woman, okay, who is the wife of the buyer or the buyer's son, must be immediately treated as a wife, not a slave, even though she was quote unquote purchased as a slave. Okay. So you can't use this process to avoid paying a dowry or avoid being respectful. If that woman is not treated as a wife, if she's not respected and loved and cared for, she is to be immediately set free without debt and without any returning of the dowry or payment that was made. Okay, so like if your family is in debt and the person that you're in debt to in ancient Israel, because again, this is not something that we do in our modern world. So in ancient Israel, somebody's in debt. The person they're in debt to goes, okay, so here's the deal. Either you can all come work for me as bondservants, or you could just give me your daughter. I'll marry her, make her my wife, and then we'll be even. Okay? So you agree to that. And then he mistreats her. The moment he mistreats her, she is free from debt and from him entirely. And there's no debt that remains. Okay? So again, I'm just pointing out that this is nothing like the kind of evil slavery that existed in the recent past. Also, in Exodus chapter 21, the book of the Bible that talks about slavery in the Old Testament, in verses 26 and 27, it talks about how any physical harm that comes to a slave from their master would immediately result in the slave being set free, completely free of debt. Okay? And the big thing about this is that the fact that it keeps saying free of debt is important because it shows that slavery in the Old Testament was explicitly about the repayment of debt.
Yeah.
It was not about owning human beings like they were cattle.
I mean, it makes sense. It makes more sense in that. I mean, how many times did you hear of a story in Judaism of someone mistreating a slave? I mean, that's my thing. I feel like if it was that really that big of a deal, the Bible would be like, hey, this person was mistreating their slave, and this is what happened to them, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, so I find it interesting that, like, that never really comes up. And I get, like, okay, it probably wouldn't come up as much as it would have happened. But it was upfront at the beginning said not to be allowed. And so, I mean, the thing is the Bible gets a lot of criticism about quote-unquote slavery, but the reality is that the slavery that the Bible allows for is really a system of debt repayment. Okay? And so when we apply our modern world and our modern thoughts about slavery that existed in the 1800s that led to the Civil War, slavery that existed in the 1700s, and we apply the righteous anger that is deserved for how horrible those things were, and then we apply them on the Bible when it talks about an ancient system of debt, it's not accurate.
Right.
Okay. Yes, our modern world is better than the ancient world in some ways. Okay? In some ways, our world is better. We live in a world where our government is not okay with human beings selling other human beings to other people.
But they are okay with, you know, putting us in debt. But that's not the point.
Oh, no, we're getting there. That is the point, actually. We're getting there.
Oh, okay. Well, I made the point before the point.
Yeah, no. I mean, we're on the same wavelength. And so some of these things are wrong, but the thing is that these people were enslaved to financial debt. They were enslaved to jobs that they disliked, hated, or had no reason to do other than the fact that they were in so much debt that they had to pay their bills and they were forced to do things they hated. That does sound similar, doesn't it? Like, the thing is that we are using different words to talk about what really is the same system. And that brings us to these instructions because, well, yes, these systems are similar and we can apply that a little more directly in a minute. But the reality is that these instructions that Paul gives to masters and slaves and the instructions he gives to Onesimus to go back and right the wrong that he did and to Philemon to forgive the wrong that was done on the account of Paul show us one simple fact. And that is that what we do has nothing to do with what other people do. Your action is not the justification and the righteousness of your action is not based on how wrong the person who acted against you and that you're responding to is. That person can wrong you, and that does not justify you wronging them. And so we see Paul telling the person who was in bond service or the person who was a slave was told to do right by the position they found themselves in, even if it was a position that was wrong to exist, they still were to do as right as they could in that position.
Well, I mean, isn't that kind of like Jesus says, like, you have heard eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth, but a new commandment I give to you, you know?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, like, and the thing is he's not saying, hey, slaves, if your master is being a brutal, awful person and torturing you, that you shouldn't do something about it. Because he's also saying that the master can't threaten, can't hurt, can't harm those who are working for him in any way. And again, remember, the word for slave is the same as the word for bondservant, which is the same as the word for servant, which literally just means employee. Okay? And so we see this kind of thing all over the place, that sin does not justify sinful responses. Wrongs don't justify other wrongs. Two wrongs do not make a right. As we tell our kindergartners, but then we become adults and we seem to think that two wrongs do make a right because it makes us feel good, and we forget about all the lessons that we teach our kids at 6 years old.
And then we wonder why society's going downhill when we have...
Yeah, because I can't tell you the amount of times I see people who should know better, say that they were wronged, and so it was right of them to act wrong. But then they'll turn around and they'll tell young children and they'll read them their fables and the stories and the moral lessons that we tell kids, that two wrongs don't make a right. And I'm just like, your entire life says differently. Because we don't always live that example, and we should be.
That's the thing, like, a lot of times the morality of children is a lot better than the morality of people.
We teach them what we intend not what we actually do.
But children are pretty basic. Like, eye for an eye, tooth for tooth is a very, like, primal instinct that all mm-hmm. children have.
Like, yeah.
Let's just be honest. And we teach it out of them. And then we get older. Like, I'm dealing with situations at work. Like, I'm not going to go. I have opportunity to, like, go and mess with what they're doing, but I'm not going to.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, that's not what I'm supposed to do.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the thing, is that we see this in the Bible all over the place. David, the man after God's own heart, was not allowed to build the temple that he spent his entire life aching for. Like, David was so loved by God that David got to sit in a tent and just chill playing music for God alone with the Ark of the Covenant.
Sounds like a life.
Right? Like just, that's crazy. But yet, David was so unclean because of the amount of death and murder and destruction that he brought upon people that he couldn't build a temple. Right? I mean, I know he did other things too, but like, David did so many bad things that even though God let him sit in this tent with him, he couldn't build a temple.
Because, I mean, it's just like Moses, how he does all these amazing things and he hits a rock and God's like, nope.
Yep. Peter was rebuked for attacking the soldiers at Jesus' arrest.
Yeah.
And the thing is it's crazy how there's people now in the church who almost seem to think that Peter was right for that.
He wasn't. But like, on the surface, their reaction to certain political statements or their reaction to someone,
anything they dislike.
Yeah.
Yeah. So even the sons of Israel, to get to a really extreme example, when they destroyed the city because the prince of that city raped their sister, they were wrong. They're described as wrong. They're shown as wrong. It wasn't a great victory for them that they did this bad thing. Okay. And so we see in the Bible this idea that the rightness of your action, of a person's action, has to do with the situation that they're in. Situational ethics biblical situational ethics are not that something can be right for person A and wrong for person B. No. Biblical situational ethics is just the simple fact that your right or wrong action is solely dependent upon the situation you are in and what is right. The fact that other people wronged you is irrelevant.
Yeah.
The fact that it's not fair is irrelevant. The fact that you deserve better is irrelevant. The only thing that matters is that in that decision, you do the right thing. That's it.
Right.
And so when we look at this passage of Paul telling the bondservant or the slave or whatever to obey and the master to obey, the thing is that really it's more like he's telling employees and bosses to do these things. And let's think about our modern world. How many people do we know that go to their work and grumble and complain and moan and hate every second of it? But guess what? They are in so much debt and have so many contracted bills that they can't do anything out of that. Guess what? They go into work tomorrow.
Yeah.
How is that not a bondservant? The only reason we go to work is because we have debt.
Yes.
Because the thing is if I woke up tomorrow and I didn't have any debt, the amount of money I would need to support my family would be like 1/10 of what it is. If we had a place to live and transportation fully paid for,
Yeah.
And even like a half an acre of land that was ours, it would cost almost nothing to support a family. But because everything is debt and we're not allowed to own anything outright, functionally, we're all bond servants. The difference is we're bond servants to a faceless system, not to a specific person. Right? And so here we are in a situation that we don't always acknowledge this. So like these Colossians versions, really we should look at it, employees obey in everything those who are your earthly bosses, your earthly managers, not by the way of eye servants as people pleasers, but with sincerity of heart, fearing the Lord. Whatever you do, work heartily for the Lord and not for men, knowing that from the Lord you will receive the inheritance as your reward. You are serving the Lord Christ. For the wrongdoer will be paid back for the wrong he has done, and there is no partiality. Bosses, treat your employees justly and fairly, knowing that you have a boss in heaven. And all of a sudden, this whole passage makes sense, because instead of using archaic words that reference a system that is actually evil and isn't what it was talking about anyway, we simply are using words that reference the system we use in the way that it likely was used back then. And it clarifies everything, which brings us back to Onesimus and Philemon. The reality is that we don't know what happened to him. There's a bishop of Ephesus that followed Timothy as the bishop of Ephesus historically that is considered to be one Onesimus. And so we think that that's him. We think that he ended up being imprisoned in Rome and that he was martyred during the reign of Domitian and the persecution of Trajan. Okay. Some traditions hold that he was stoned. Some traditions say he was beheaded. Either way, though, Onesimus' story is one that we have to this day because of the letter to Philemon. And that story is that Onesimus owed Philemon. Onesimus was in debt to Philemon, and Onesimus left, and he wronged him. And in coming to God and in finding Christ, no matter how much Paul loved Onesimus, no matter how much potential he saw in him, Paul knew that this man had to go back and make things right with the person that he had a debt to.
Fulfilling it, yeah. Yeah. And, you know, the thing is like with like Onesimus or Onesimus, sorry. With Onesimus,
I don't know.
Like I've heard it used so many different ways. So many different preached many different ways. And what I always fall back to is like, even if it does reference slavery, even if it does, mm-hmm. you cannot look back with 21st century morality and retroactively apply it.
Yeah.
And does that make the Bible flawed? No. Because the reality is that that was the reality at the time.
Yeah.
And
the thing about the Bible is that it's always pulling them to better.
Yeah.
The fact that it was successful doesn't make it bad now that we're in the better that the Bible was pulling them towards.
Right. And if anything, it should serve as a reminder that we are blessed and
we are.
And that we don't have to, like, I guess we do have to go to work, but and that and that we don't have to go get paid nothing to pay off our debt. Like, at least we get a little bit of fun money, right?
Yeah.
So
well, yeah, yeah. Like, the thing is that even though we are, and I mean, the thing is I'm sure that this applied on some level back then too, but even though we are in a quote-unquote debt and we're stuck in a system that there isn't really an easy escape from, and yes, you please don't send me all your thousands of side gigs that supposedly pay and get you out of it, because they really don't work.
No.
But the thing is that the moral of the story is not about that stuff. It's about the fact that in whatever state we find ourselves in, therewith we need to be content. And we need to understand that God is in control. And when you live your life understanding that God is in control, you'll understand that the role of Philemon in his life is to do right in whatever situation he finds himself in, to act in kindness, to act in respect, to care for the people that are in front of him, and to do the right thing. And right. The job of Onesimus was the same exact thing, to do kindness, to do justice, to do mercy, to show good things, to show the fruit of the Spirit. It's just from a different perspective. And it doesn't matter what side of any kind of conflict or any kind of relationship you're in, the goal of you as a Christian is to do the right thing in that situation.
Right.
And so that's what we can learn from this. That's what the lesson of slavery in the Bible is. Because ultimately, we can't apply the evils of modern slavery to the ancient world and to the Bible, because they are not the same. And so we wanted to bring that. We wanted to talk about this. It's a topic that came up in Ephesians and we decided not to talk about it then. But then here covering Colossians and Philemon, we thought, how do we get around it? We got to cover this at this point. And so I hope that was informative. I hope that shed some light, and I hope it inspired you that in no matter where you are, in the day-to-day grind of whatever your career is, in the moment-to-moment life that you're living, that you have a new inspiration to treat every second of every day as worship to God. Not because you want people to look at you as good, but because you see it as the worship to the Creator that it is. And we thank you for being with us next week. We are so excited. We are starting our new series on Secrets of the Damned. So do not miss next Wednesday when we release our new episode, because it is great and should not be missed.
Yep. And we will see you guys next week.